Fintech Chatter, brought to you by Tier 1 People, leaders in fintech executive search. Today's guest is Liam Millward, CEO and co-founder of Instant. Instant's mission is to build the future of a frictionless economy, transforming billions of complex checkouts into one-tap shopping experiences. They create a world where the experience of checkout is effortless, anywhere and everywhere across the internet. Instant has raised over $2.2 million in venture capital as one of Australia's biggest pre-seed funding rounds known to date, led by Blackbird, 1013, Reinventure, Larry Diamond, and more. Liam, welcome to the show.
Dexter, thanks for having me. So good to be here.
Mate, it is very good to have you. When I started 2022, I made a commitment that this year we were going to showcase the next generation of Aussie fintech founders. I didn't at that point think I would have a teenager come out of the show. So, you know, first of all, kudos to you. You're the first ever teenager ever to be on Fintech Chatter.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me again. I've just lost my voice recently, so hopefully that doesn't annoy everyone too much. But no, thanks for having me.
Well, maybe makes you sound a little bit older than what you are. Well, in all seriousness, it's very cool to have you on. Look, I just think it's awesome to see somebody with your experience going out and tackling fintech head on. I gave a little bit of an intro there to Instant, but you want to tell our listeners a little bit more about what you do and the big problem that you solve?
Yeah, cool. So basically, in short, Instant is focused towards working with sellers, merchants, online brands to simplify the checkout experience of their customers. You know, I think everyone hates a long checkout experience online. And that's definitely where our product offering has started to really simplify that from a consumer's perspective and make that buying experience online super easy. And by doing that, really making a brand's conversion increase by simply making that checkout experience easier. So that's kind of Instant, yeah, in a nutshell.
Cool. Now, there's obviously been some kind of high profile players in the space this year. What is it that Instant's doing a bit differently?
Yeah, I mean, definitely some high, it was, you know, earlier in the year, Bolt and Fast in particular, in this space, and you know, Instant was kind of that third player. In particular, we were all focusing towards simplifying that checkout experience, right? You know, Fast started as a little bit more of a one-click login, which was a really cool offering. And Bolt's been around for quite some time, and we, you know, we've only just hit a year old. So, looking to where we are now. That kind of ties into, you know, we've started as a one-click checkout and as I said just before, and that was really Fast offering. I think, you know, wrapping it up, Bolt has, you know, a really great user experience on the different end of the checkout. They really simplify, or in my words of expressing it, they really simplify just the core checkout for a merchant. Mm. Whereas for us, like, our vision internally is, how do we bring the Amazon-style checkout experience to the rest of the internet?
Yeah.
People purchase on Amazon because it's, you know, they've obviously got all the products there, but it's an easy checkout. Yeah. It's an easy refunds experience. It's an easy delivery experience. So we want to be a whole lot more than a checkout long-term.
Cool. Now, one of the things that I keep talking about on this show is, you know, whenever I'm looking at an opportunity or a new, you know, a new business that comes to me, I always look at it through the eyes of my kids. And the reason being is that they are the ones that are likely to be using this, not me, right? And their expectations, right? There's no way that they would go through the shit that I've gone through, you know, being on hold for 2 hours to speak to a bank. I remember my son, and he was about 8 at the time, telling me, you know, he was going crazy because he got cash off his gran when we visited the UK.
Right.
And the process of him turning that cash into Robux was about five different steps. And he figured out the amount of money that he'd been charged at each of those steps. He's going crazy, right? So what is it that you think, you know, from your perspective of being, you know, kind of the, you're actually in the cohort of the consumers that you're building for. What is it that you think has kind of brought to Instant that maybe has give you a bit of an edge over, say, some of the competitors?
Yeah, I mean, we've always said that we're like pretty Gen Z focused, we like to say. I think touching on your point there, like people my age in particular or younger or even a little bit older than me, maybe even you, Dexter, hate things to be complicated, take so much time. If it takes too much time or if it's too frustrating, it's just like, stuff this, can't be bothered, I'll come back later. This is too hard basket. And it just doesn't get done, right? And then so from a checkout perspective, that's definitely what we're tackling for a seller more, I would say, is how do we remove the too hard basket thoughts for a consumer? Where as soon as they see something, they have the ability to purchase it without so much complication behind it. You know, and then from a consumer's perspective, especially a Gen Z consumer, you know, looking at it from a perspective of, you know, as they see something on TikTok or Instagram from an influencer, how do they then go and buy that item instantly without the complication behind it? Yeah. And that's really interesting to kind of tackle. Yeah. And I think it'll change a lot over time as well.
Yeah. I read something recently that said that TikTok was starting to overtake Google as the world's search engine.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, it's kind of amazing to see how quickly people's behaviors are changing.
And, you know, even like the food apps, you know, Uber Eats, DoorDash, or when you book an Uber, that experience to book that Uber or purchase your Uber Eats is super simple. They already have your card information. They already have your personal information. And that's why people love the experience.
So what was it that kind of inspired you to go down the path of an entrepreneur?
I think maybe accidentally. So I originally wanted to go to university and study medicine and become a doctor. That was kind of my life plan in high school or even primary school, really. We were traveling around Australia and some of the world for about 2.5-3 years with my parents and my sister. And I was 14, 15 at that point, and started a travel blog online, and we grew an audience of around like 20,000 followers or more, I think, across like Instagram and Facebook. And we just started sharing our travels, really. And during that time, started working with brands and destinations to promote these regions, right? And then we stopped traveling. And that's when I started my first real business, which was called Navigate Australia. And Navigate Australia was basically a free digital travel magazine focused on everything caravan, camping, travel related here in Australia. At that same time, I was fast tracking my education to finish year 12 at 16. And I went to uni and studied business and marketing. And I was running this magazine on the side. It was kind of like mid COVID. And I was studying and I was running this magazine and people just stopped traveling. And we found it really hard to source travel content to publish. And so naturally the magazine kind of just winded down, right? And I was working on a marketing assignment, which was focusing on the recent growth of e-commerce towards the middle of COVID. And I started an online Shopify store, drop shipping products and advertising them on Facebook ads, started getting some traction through this site and saw a huge drop off in people abandoning cart at the point that they needed to go through that checkout experience. And so initially it was just me solving my own problem. And that was like November, December, 2020. I found my co-founder Will in December, March, 2021, reached out to hundreds of software engineers on LinkedIn. And Will was one of the guys that responded to me. I was offering them all jobs when I had no money at 17. And he was 19 at the time working at WiseTech. And then we started building it together. And that's kind of, yeah, that was kind of the accidental but intentional journey at the same time.
How did you kind of overcome, you know, what I'm assuming would have been people taking you seriously, right? So 17-year-old and you're reaching out to people, you've got no money and you're saying, hey, would you be interested in joining me to build something? I would imagine there'd be a lot of people would, you know, kind of think it was, you know, you were crazy or it was a scam, or how did you kind of overcome all of that?
Yeah, looking back on it now, I think it was definitely there, but maybe I just kind of turned a blind eye to it. I think that just messaging, I think LinkedIn was definitely like my biggest resource in the early days, reaching out to so many people just to get on a call with them. I went through a phase where I was doing my uni, but I was trying to figure out what was next for me. I really wanted to run a business and I had so many ideas. I started this podcast. Funny, I started this podcast thing.
There's no money in podcasts, right? Like, I'm telling you now.
That's really interesting. Lucky we didn't do that then. So that was, you know, that was one idea, but, you know, kind of between trying to muck around with all these different ideas and starting Quick Checkout, it was called at the time, which then kind of went to Instant. Just reached out to so many people on LinkedIn, investors, people that just worked at startups, just trying to meet people, just trying to seriously meet people and grow that network, initially, and connecting with anyone and everyone on LinkedIn. Like, I'd max out my LinkedIn requests every single week, and just send them a message. And then, you know, I think it really came down to just executing. We had this idea and executing on it, and people started to take us seriously. We got customers. We built a product by ourselves.
Who were your first customers?
So first customer was Global Footcare Group. So Jeff is the founder or CEO of that. Reached out to him on LinkedIn. He got back to me. We organized a call, showed him the Figma prototype of what we wanted to build. He gave us some feedback. We went back to him with some idea, with basically a technical build of the product, and he agreed to be our first customer. And they ended up investing in us as well in our first angel round.
Awesome.
So we lost 10 of their stores.
Yeah, fantastic. So what was the point where kind of, you know, you felt, now I'm being taken seriously?
I would say once I had a co-founder, a technical co-founder, Will. I big props to founders that do it themselves, but I think definitely being a team is insane.
I just actually this morning I spoke with Dave Washbrook, who've just launched the podcast today. He's a co-founder of Look Who's Charging. So one of Australia's kind of real success stories in fintech. Mm. And he's now got his own venture fund. And the first thing he said was, what do you look for? It was like, you know, founding teams that have a technical co-founder.
Yeah.
Because it's just so difficult. The amount of mistakes and issues that you have of building something and problems that you get when you don't have a technical co-founder.
To me, it's a different frame of mind as well. You can't go from being so deep in code with an MVP product to then, you know, whiteboarding out your go-to-market and revenue strategy. You know, like, that is just, it's just, you need focus. And whilst you both are involved in those areas quite heavily together, and you're propping each other up and you're helping each other out, and there's still, I think, that distinct split between like product and engineering, and like everything to do with building a company, so important in the early days. Like, Will was building a product and, you know, I was working out, okay, who's our first customers? Who's our, you know, hiring? Who are we raising money from? I don't think you can do them both.
Well, you can't, right?
If you can, good. Yeah, I mean, amazing job.
Yeah. I mean, the tech person literally has to lock themselves away in a room, right? And just build.
Right.
That's why I think, you know, we've got this issue around, you know, work from home, and, you know, people like ourselves, where we're entrepreneurial, we're extroverts, you know, we're all about people, we're all about sales, we're all about, you know, connection. you have to be, you know, out and about and just, you know, busy and, you know, whilst you're focused, there's still so many different things that you're kind of trying to do at once, right? Whereas the technical co-founder just locks themselves away.
Oh, exactly. And I think we made it work really well, Will and I. I think we work really, really well together, and we, you know, building out initial foundations of the company. I actually couldn't imagine without Will, right? And we, just from a LinkedIn message, it just shows you don't, like, you really, you know, it's worth the hustle to find that initial co-founder, because it just speeds the journey up so much. And, you know, I think that clear, distinct roles as well has made it really work. You know, Will is super responsible, but also super knowledgeable, which enables him to do so well, you know, with leading that engineering side of Instant, which I really liked, whereas I really liked the, you know, the company building, the hiring, that initial go-to-market plan side. And whilst we have awesome people now, like, you know, Rick, who leads our sales and does an amazing job, and Dan, who leads like our operations and strategy, and Jay, who leads marketing, like in the early days, it's really just about that initial core team and that's clear, distinct, which just speeds up the journey, I think.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you know, you've not had the advantage of a lot of fintech founders who, you look at the kind of age group, you know, they're typically in their kind of late 30s, 40s, have had a lot of experience in corporate experience and leadership and management and all of that stuff. You've not had the benefit of that. How have you gone about, you know, kind of just learning that stuff, right? And kind of being able to bring a team together and deal with the challenges that you get?
Yeah, that's probably a very common question I get. And I think in the early days, it was super, or even, to be honest, even now, it is super important to, from my perspective, surround yourself with people that have done it before. And so even pre-Will, pre my co-founder, I was pitching to, I had this product idea and I was trying to, this was back on, you know, reaching out to people on LinkedIn. I was trying to find our first customer for Instant. And I reached out to this guy named Brandon Shepherd. He was the chief product officer at Neato. Neato is like an e-commerce platform that merchants can use. And obviously they'd be a customer of ours, or potentially a partner, to, you know, integrate Instant into, so then we could work with their merchants. And I spoke to Brandon, who was their chief product officer, and he gave me a bunch of advice, you know, and then 6 months later, I organized another call with him. I then was like, Brandon, can we potentially like organize a call every week or every second week? And we did that. And, Brandon now has equity in the company, and he's, we, you know, Will and I chat with him all the time. So he's kind of like an advisor to Will and myself. But what I really like in touching on the point around surrounding yourself with people is Brandon started as basically the most junior person at Neato, working with, the founder there, and grew over time into being that CPO role. He's been on that journey, right? And then the second person is Matt Bright. And he was, you know, he was most recently at OpenPay and before that, or Open Insurance, sorry. And before that, he was, at Zip. And yeah, so just yeah, around.
Mate, I remember, you know, first catching up with Matt in what, 2016, when I launched Tier One People, and you know, he just, you know, they'd just gone into stone and chalk. And so he's been there from kind of early days, right?
Exactly. So yeah, he's been a huge help and he works alongside me a lot. So yeah, just surround yourself with people that have done it before. And can just help you, just someone that you can just pick up the phone. That's not an investor, not an employee, not a customer, but someone that's out of the weeds, but still on the journey.
Yeah. Look, it's a really, and it, you know, it's such a lonely place being a chief exec. You know, I speak with chief execs every day and everybody, you know, is in this really difficult position where it's almost like they're the filling in a shit sandwich. You know, the things that you have to deal with, oftentimes you can't go to your people. Oftentimes you can't go to investors, and you just have to, you know, hold on to it. And often I can be an outlet of just for them to, you know, kind of whether it's imposter syndrome or just, oh, those guys are really struggling. We thought they were doing great. You know, it's kind of, you just need to have that, you know, kind of outlet to vent, to let go, to do it where you know that you can trust the person and that you're going to get some kind of help or support back, 100%. Right? Or just a bit of guidance back. Yeah, so that never goes away, by the way, right? Like that's always going to be there.
Now, it's so important.
We're talking about investors. Data, I think, was, you know, one of the biggest seed rounds in Australia ever, 2.2 million, likes of Reinventure, Blackbird on board. How did you go about that?
Yeah, so we raised our first round of capital, which was around 250K angel round. You know, kind of mid last year. And then I was 17 at that point. So a bit of a fun fact, my mum was still the director of the company, having to sign for everything.
Mate, you weren't even an adult.
I couldn't sign for anything. I couldn't open a bank account, et cetera, et cetera. And then, we raised 2.2 mil led by Blackbird. I think it ended up closing in October or November last year. My birthday is in September, so I had to wait a month or so. So then we could close it legally, which was funny. So we raised 2.2 mil led by Blackbird, which was at the time the biggest pre-seed round.
Yeah. Now, one of the biggest things that I'm seeing right now, and certainly it's coming through in the briefs that we're getting from clients, is the recognition that we're in a very different economic cycle, and that, you know, the challenges that lie ahead, you know, the requests that we're getting from clients is, hey, we want to see people who've got experience managing through those cycles, because now with capital not as readily available, we're going to have to get to profit a lot sooner than we thought, or generate revenue and keep our costs down. What do you kind of see as, you know, the challenges for you moving into this type of cycle, and how do you think you can kind of equip yourself when you haven't necessarily had that experience of going through it before to kind of shift gears and shift mindset and focus that quickly when the market moves as well?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one. And I think, most recently on a more of a lower way of putting things, we changed our mindset internally from being very processing volume focused. So we were, you know, all of our targets and the way we were doing things and our priorities were really focused towards how do we process basically more dollars through Instant. Yeah. How do we process the amount, so many orders? How do we process millions and millions and millions, right? But processing that millions and millions and millions doesn't mean anything unless we're actually making money off it.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the biggest things I implemented recently, was let's completely shift all of our mindset, the way that we look at things, to being revenue focused.
Yeah.
How will be making more money out of this? How are we changing our sales strategies to be revenue focused? How are we building a product that's a lot more attractive so people actually pay more for it? And that's already seen. You know, we've gone from basically growing quite steadily to, since implementing more of a revenue mindset, last two months we've grown our revenue 2.5 times month on month.
Wow.
Just since implementing that,
yeah,
more of that mindset. And so that on a lower level, I think that's been really important for us.
Mate, that, you know, is the level, right? Like, if you can keep doing that, right, that's it's happy days.
Exactly. And, you know, I think it's just coming down to a quality team. I think having a small-ish team is underrated, and being able to move at speed.
How many people are you, Liam?
There are only nine right. people. We have always been really efficient with our capital. You know, we've basically still got most of it on hand, to be honest.
Mm.
Recognizing that we're also still pre-seed stage, For the stage we're at, we have hit our milestones, and so continuing to overachieve those. But basically, I think what it comes down to, Dexter, is just really hustling to get sales through the door, and making sure your team are the best people to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And look, you know, I mean, the benefit of all of this is the experience that you're getting right now, having, you know, run businesses through two cycles before. I can guarantee you, right, that this will be the best experience, and there'll be hairy times. And even if it doesn't work out the way that you want it to, you'll look back, and what you go through now will set the foundation for everything that is successful for you in the future.
Well, being through the two cycles before, what's your advice?
Exactly what you're doing, right? I've been saying this. The biggest concern that I had as we came out of COVID was this growth at all costs, right? It's like, you have to focus on revenue. You have to, you know, for me, I'm always, you know, I love a bootstrap story because those people are so focused, you know, and run lean. Now, the challenge that you have is that when you get to that point that you need to scale, you've either got to bring in people that can do that, which is very different to the skill set that kind of we're talking about now. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have to decide whether you're the right person to lead the business, right? They're difficult decisions, but not ones that need to be made in the near to kind of, you know, midterm term kind of period. Revenue's vanity, profit is sanity. You know, cash flow is king. That's the reality when you hit this type of period, right? And I think there is nothing more satisfying as a business owner myself when somebody's prepared to pay you good money to use your service or your product, and that you deliver on the promise for them. I think there's something very noble about doing that.
And it's like, not just, and it's, how do you not just bump up the prices all of a sudden, but how do you really focus towards building a really attractive product?
Yeah.
That people, you go from being not only just a vitamin, not only just a painkiller, but more of a cure, right?
Yeah.
How is this like the engine of, in our case, how is this the engine of a merchant's brand?
And I think, and you've hit the nail right on the head, Liam. I think the kind of the challenge, you know, and it's the thing that I see so many fintechs, not even just startups, but scale-ups fail at, particularly when it comes to product, is, and I see the same in hiring and recruitment, where I get all these businesses coming to me and saying, hey, we know what the problem is. We've got a platform and it's technology. It's not, right? The problems are much deeper. And when you understand what the real problems are, then you can provide solutions and do them in the most efficient way possible. What I've seen in recruitment over the last 25 years is, you know, having gone from a paper-based system to technology, is technology has only amplified the problems. It hasn't solved any of them, right? Yeah. So I think it's kind of, it's critical that in these times, you know, where I hear everybody saying, oh, now is the time to build, I'd kind of tweak that and say, look, now is the time to really focus on your customers and ask them, like, what are the biggest problems that they've got? You know, and keep drilling down, right? I think this is one of the great things about being younger, right? Is that when you don't know stuff, you just keep asking why.
Exactly.
Why? And you lose that, right, as you get older. And one of the things that I think I've really benefited from having kids in my mid-30s was they kind of reinvigorated that, you know, kind of inquisitiveness, because they kept asking me why. And, you know, it's infectious, right? Like, you just forget that you know everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, becoming a parent was a bit like the slate was wiped clean anyway. And I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about being a parent. I didn't know how to do all this stuff. And so you had to just go out and ask people and figure things out and learn
You've got to learn from the people around you. Yeah. If you just continue to keep listening to yourself, you're not going to get anywhere. And, you know, yes, you have to make decisions and yes, you have to prioritize things, but it really just comes down to learning from the people around you, prioritizing the right things. And if you ask anyone on my team what I say the most, it's like a little bit of strategy and a lot of execution.
Yeah.
And just going at it, making some bets and going at it, really.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that has got me so excited about your generation, from the perspective that I've got of, you know, being in human capital, particularly with the context of, you know, how the workforce has changed and in relation to startups and the fintech space, is that the ability to learn quickly and master things quickly is phenomenal, right? It kind of reminds me when I see my kids, it's like watching The Matrix in 99, where Neo gets a chip loaded up and all of a sudden he's like a kung fu master or something. My kids just go on YouTube and watch something. And it's like within a week, they're experts, right? They're like masters at doing stuff. How have you found, you know, kind of from, you know, your own journey around learning, right? And that thing of being on the job and just, you know, kind of constantly evolving and constantly figuring out how to do things.
So how I've gone about learning is the question.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely, as I said before, around surrounding yourself with the people that have done it before. I think never be afraid to do a little bit of a quick Google search or a YouTube video, like you just said, right? Yeah. A lot of the time people have documented it, or there's, you know, I really love reading articles. I've never really been a book reader. Actually, I probably say I haven't read a book in forever. But I really love reading articles from other founders, other CEOs, other people that work at startups. I think learning from your team as well, you know, something that our head of sales, Rick, has really been pushing for is data. We really need to know the data behind our product. And so, you know, taking learnings on board that, yeah, we do need to know the data. Is important. I would say just surrounding yourself with people, and that means, you know, people in real life, people in writing, people in videos, people that have done it before, people at events, etc.
Yeah. So, I guess when you kind of look to the future, what are the ambitions that you have for Instant, and kind of what's the journey that you're on?
Yeah. So I think for us, we're incredibly focused at the moment towards our Instant Checkout product, and working with brands to simplify that checkout experience for their customers, in particular here in Australia. And, you know, we're quite successful in doing it so far, for the stage that we're at and the time that we've been in market. We've basically just hit 12 months old, really, probably a year and a half now. Mm. And, you know, we've built a product, we're live across 30 stores or probably even more now. We're doubling our revenue month on month at the moment. We're growing 120% month on month, et cetera, right? So we're quite happy with where we're at in, and with such a small team. And so now where we see our long-term going is, as I said, it's like really being focused towards what is a really attractive product that is like the engine behind a merchant's brand. How are we incredibly focused towards solving so many other problems for a merchant?
Yeah.
That kind of all ties into one. And so our vision really wraps around basically answering one question, which is how do we become the Amazon style checkout experience for the rest of the internet?
Yeah.
Amazon's very successful with e-commerce. They've done a lot of data, a lot of testing. So how do we bring that value across that checkout experience or that purchasing experience online to every other seller?
And in terms of kind of hiring, what are your plans? Are you going to sit tight with where you're at, or have you got any kind of plans to look at growing the team?
Yeah, I mean, we're always on the hunt for really quality people to join the team. You know, I think our team are, every company says it, of course, but I think our team are really, you know, a great team, a great small team. So we're always on the hunt for additional people. Right now we're sitting, I think our team size is quite good. We'll probably raise an additional capital round fairly shortly, and we'll increase the team further. We're bringing another product to market. We'll probably expand into an additional market. And so there's a lot kind of happening over the next year or so for sure.
Yeah. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they're interested in opportunities at Instant?
I still love LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn back from the early days, right? So yeah, LinkedIn's probably the best way to reach me for sure.
Cool. And if there's anybody out there that, you know, could potentially be a partner at Instant, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah, same. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn and we can probably get on email or jump on a call or whatever works best.
Cool. Right. Last question for you. My son Harry listens to the show when he goes to bed at night. When he's listening to this episode, what's the bit of advice that you got for Harry?
Ooh. I think solve something that is a clear problem or was originally your problem and that you have a passion about. I think it's a tough job being a startup founder and, it takes a lot of time to build something. So if you can go to work every day and it's something that you love, and you have a clear passion behind building that, that's an incredible privilege to have and something I'm really thankful for.
Brilliant. Thanks, mate. Well, Liam, it's been brilliant to have you on the show. I got to say, like, I am just blown away by the generations of talent that we've got coming through the ranks. It's scary, you know, kind of how fearless, smart, bright, driven. It's awesome to see. So, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, you know, kind of power to you and your parents for doing an incredible job on bringing you up and supporting you. And mate, it's just, it's amazing what you're doing. Well done.
Thanks so much, Dexter.
Thanks for listening, folks. If you're coming back, thanks so much for your support. And if you're new to the show, make sure to follow us and leave a review. You can connect with me, Dexter Cousins, on LinkedIn and Twitter. Until the next episode, stay safe. This show is presented by Tier 1 People, leaders in fintech executive search. We find world-class talent to build world-class fintech ventures. And you can find us at tier1people.com.